Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe, a podcast all about comic book movies and television. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and joining me are
James Hunt
and Reese Williamson.
Hey, listen, guys, no joke up front this month because it's a new format, we're mixing things up, we're trying something new. We're going to figure it out as we go. So this, listeners, if you're not aware, this is the new format that the main episodes are going to take, which is we're going to talk about news. We're going to talk about a Mom's Swift news. We're going to drop these episodes monthly. And we've got a whole bunch of news to talk about. And then we're also, you know, we're going to spin off. We're going to talk about other stuff that's on our mind, other stuff that maybe is on your mind that you've tweeted us about, that kind of thing. And we're going to figure it out as we go.
Just again, if you can imagine a podcast, just three guys shooting the shit.
It's never been done before.
Never been done in podcasts.
Three white guys in their 30s, middle class. We're talking about content.
Wait, Reese, can I just check? James, are you still in your 30s?
Just.
All right, okay, yeah. Just wanted to make sure.
Thank God.
Famously very old.
Elder millennial statesman.
This joke used to be less punching down when it was me, the only young one. Now it feels a bit more like bullying. Elder abuse.
Power of attorney. Wow. Let's get James Power of Attorney signed off for somebody. I've got some lawyer friends.
Okay, we are going to be looking at all the latest comic book movie news, and we're going to start off by talking about something that I couldn't quite believe was that we were watching for the first time, like online in a tweet. The Batman dropped a deleted scene of Barry Keoghan as the Joker. And spoiler alert, I guess. But is it a spoiler alert when something's just dropped on Twitter?
If it's a deleted scene, it's by definition not canonical, right?
But I just, like, wild to me that full spoilers for the Batman here, but that Barry Keoghan shows up in the Batman for one scene at the end, isn't really seen, isn't referred to directly as the Joker. And then, like, within a month of the release of the movie, was it even a month? Probably not. Like, there is a deleted scene in full of, like, you know, not only, like, the first proper look at that character of, like, you know, I don't think we ever get, like, a full face. It's all, you know, that whole movie's dark.
It's all very blurry, right? Yeah.
But, you know, it was freeze framed quickly enough that, you know, there was a good old look at that character's face to be able to put the headline, you know, above the headline of the articles. And also the first time that Batman and that Joker were interacting, which feels like it's a big deal. And, like, I don't know, if I was Matt Reeves, I'd be like, look, burn the tape. Just like, let's save it. Let's not blow this on Twitter a month after the film came out. But
It does seem mad. Like, it's a good scene. It's a really interesting scene. I think I think the movie could have stood to have it in there. The only reason I can imagine for taking it out is if they're really not sure whether they're actually doing the Joker next or not.
But then what?
They just really wanted to hedge their bets.
But then why have the scene at the end?
I mean, that scene is such a small view of the character compared to this one.
Yeah, but when you put a cameo of the biggest villain in your franchise at the end of a movie, the audience is going to expect that they're going to see him next.
Sure, yeah.
That just is the expectation.
Yeah, but maybe, you know, to James's point, it's perhaps they regretted putting, you know, perhaps what they should have done to James to sort of is to put him in the movie a bit more. What if he is more of a supporting role in Batman, in the Batman 2, but the main villain in the Batman 3, and then all of a sudden you have set expectations and you've given audiences very little. You haven't even said it's the character's name. You haven't given him a whole face shot. And actually, Matt Reeves is like, oh shit, people are really going ham for this cameo. But actually, they're going to get now too kind of hyped for you know, a movie that's going to come out in 2.5 years. Whereas actually, we need to satisfy them a bit more now so that some of that anticipation is lessened a bit so that we can play our longer game, maybe, because
the totality of that scene in the movie plus dropping it on Twitter feels mishandled to me. Whatever the original intention is or the intention is now, it felt like a very weird way to do it. But it is there.
Yeah, I agree.
What do you think, Reese? Would you have liked to see it in the movie, ideally?
I feel like, you know, in our text chat that we have, that we, you know, the three Cinematic Universe boys, we talk midweek, we have a chat between episodes. Of course, listeners, of course, we're friends in real life. James said that you thought the clip sort of coloured or explained further the Riddler's motivations, which I just don't get. So I don't think it would have added anything to the movie, to be honest. So my view is probably it probably would have just made you think, you know, had you thinking about the Joker a bit more in that last third, if let's say that scene was in the, you know, was sort of just between act two and three, and perhaps because the performance is, you know, we can talk about it, interesting, and the makeup setup is interesting versus Paul Dano's Riddler that is, you know, and we talked about it in our previous episode, just maybe not particularly interesting. Probably it might have overshadowed Dano a bit, but right. I'd like to hear you, James, on what I don't really know what you meant by that text, because we're friends, we do text. So I just wonder what you think of that, what you meant by that text.
So it sounds very threatening when you put it like that.
What do you mean? Explain.
What do you mean by this? What did you mean by what I thought was, basically, there's no point in the movie where Batman figures out specifically what the Riddler's sort of interests and motivations are. Like, he, in that scene with the Joker, the, you know, and this is another example of Batman being on the back foot in this movie, but the Joker basically says to him, like, no, he's taking down the rich and powerful, so it's probably someone, you know, an orphan, someone forgotten, someone who's been failed by the system, and he has that insight that Batman lacks. And that's a leap that the audience makes that Batman never does on screen, I think. So I can see a good reason for having it in the movie.
Mm.
I think if there's any good reason for taking it out, aside from the way that it limits their options by explicitly saying, you know, this Batman and this Joker have met previously, which the movie as released doesn't.
I'm trying to remember the details of the scene. It also implies that the Joker was one of his earlier foes, and that the reason he's in Arkham is because Batman has already taken him down at some point.
I think you're supposed to infer that from the scene, I think.
But I think the reason to take it out is just because we've seen the idea so many times of the detective going to the previous captor, you know, their previous foe, and pumping them for information. Take on it.
Yeah.
It's literally it's a scene in The Dark Knight where, you know, he goes and talks to him in GCPD, and you get that sequence there where he's being captured, but it was his plan, and he's there to reveal information, and they've literally already done that.
The thing that I don't think I'd be able to have a take on which of these it is until I see the movie, but I was like, it could make Batman feel like less of a loner in the movie by having, even if it is like the former villains are his friends, or the flip of that is it could feel like, oh my God, how sad, like it's even more sad and pathetic that the only person that this Batman is able to talk to is like the former villains. So I don't know how that would have played unless I'd seen it in context in the film, but those were that was what was my internal conflict that was raging while I was watching it. What do you guys think of the makeup and the character design? Because I wasn't keen on what we saw in the film, you know, in the scene in the released film. We get a closer look here. What are your thoughts on it? It's a lot.
It's very, I thought it was very plasticky in the film that we saw. In this scene, I think I get a slightly better sense of it. It reminds me, at least in the facial expression, of the sort of Brian Bolland Joker design, which has that sort of rictus grin, which is one we haven't really seen since Cesar Romero. Jack Nicholson, I guess.
Yeah. I guess, you know, and I haven't read as many Batman comics as probably either of you, but the thing that it reminded me of was the Scott Snyder Batman. The Scott Snyder Joker with the, like, and I know he literally cuts off his entire face, but like the kind of like almost cartoonishness of the amount of scarring, and almost like the makeup was like scarred on as well. There was like, it was just like his face was fucked up beyond measure, and it was probably self inflicted. So that's what I was getting from it. And I don't know. It does still feel like a lot, even out of context.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, we could read too much into what the makeup job says about Reeves's take on the character. You know, he's so physically scarred, so it'll be a Joker motivated by that to a degree, that he's sort of so visibly outside of society, as opposed to Heath Ledger and to an extent Nicholson, who kind of have done some of that extra work to themselves by choice. I think that's a bit foolish, though. I think actually probably we ought to take is just that. I was going to call him Druig. That's not his real name. The Keegan performance. and the limited dialogue that they have together, but I was, yeah, I was broadly into it. You know, it's sort of, it's, and I, you know, to pick up on a previous point, I like the idea that, which is something we didn't really get in the Nolan movies, or I think in the Schumacher movies, this idea of Batman interacting with his rogues gallery. You know, in the comics, obviously, like, he's got such history with all these characters, and that every comic with the Penguin in it is in some degree informed by every previous interaction the Batman has had with the Penguin. I just like the idea that these movies plus TV shows could, you know, there'll be a more of a sense of a rogues gallery, sort of a living rogues gallery that perhaps kind of interacts with each other movie to movie and TV show to
it's
TV show.
Something
like that.
That's a lot trickier to do in superhero movies, I think, is that idea of a like established rogues gallery. It's more something that is suited to the traditional model of superhero TV. You know, like, you could do that in a kind of like Lois and Clark style of series, you know, or like the cartoons. You can bring those characters back. Like, you know, Batman the Animated Series, you know, sometimes those are villains you meet for the first time, and sometimes they're just villains that Batman's fought a bunch of times before. But it is something, I guess, that you're right, it's completely ingrained in comics that most of the villains that you are meeting, there is that history with the hero. And it's very rare that you get to do that in superhero movies. Even, you know, like last year when we're bringing back Alfred Molina and Willem Dafoe, like, there's not really moments that film doesn't have the time to like go to those two. Let's really dig down to the pre-existing relationship we've got with Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. It's just not on the film's mind, is it? Mm-hmm. And it can't be because the lead of the movie is a different Spider-Man. But yeah, I think that's an interesting point, and I would like,
which is why, you know, and back to my original point again, maybe in Matt Reeves's head, the Joker is, and I feel like he said this in interviews post the release, and people didn't believe him, but maybe genuinely the Joker is not the villain of the second movie, but is in the second movie, and you know, there's a build to something else. You know, in the same way, you know, in the MCU, you see that it's easier to do. You have, you know, villains that build over time. Obviously, with this series, it's different because it's kind of, it's not connected to wider stuff. It feels like we're going to get the Batman 2, the Batman 3, probably, right? So you're going to have to play around in that toolbox with a couple of TV show spin-offs. But yeah, that's why I think, again, the release of this clip maybe feeds into that as an idea. But having said that, what I think would be the worst case scenario is that the Batman 2 has, you know, three scenes where Batman goes and visits the Joker in Arkham, and we get a Hannibal Lecter style. I mean, that would be, that's done. So, right? So I hope it's not that. I hope whatever Reeves's idea for the Joker in the Batman 2, if he's not the main villain, is a bit more interesting than that. But I've got faith.
It has been done. But also, I'll just say, like, I think that's a trope that works. It does. Mm. It does generally work. So I wouldn't be too against that. What was that like? That, because that's kind of what I hoped that they were going to be doing with Baron Zemo in fucking the Winter Soldier, and we obviously didn't. That's not the take they went for with that character at all.
I guess, you know, let's hope for a Barry Keoghan as the Joker dances in a, you know, European nightclub for what I think was 15 seconds, but what felt like was about 15 minutes. Like, let's all hope for that, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
You're saying, Joe, you sicko. Yeah. You sick weirdo.
I'm in for it. We should also mention the Batman has performed, like, pretty well at the box office. I think it's still difficult to have, even as we are like seeing a box office that is less and less affected by the global pandemic. It's difficult to benchmark exactly how it performed, but it feels like it's done quite well. And like the idea, the idea of a second and third Matt Reeves Batman feels pretty likely at this point.
Oh, 100%.
And I think that, but, you know,
they've greenlit the Batman too.
Yeah, but they greenlit Green Lantern too, you know? So,
and it's coming out. It's coming out. Ryan Reynolds drinking tequila, you know, Green Lantern, bro. Come on.
Yeah. I think probably, you know, the solid reviews for the film as well probably have played into that. And who knows, maybe if they do really nail the Barry Keoghan Joker, that then you'll see a similar kind of Batman Begins to Dark Knight box office boost when that sequel comes out.
Don't you also love? I love the idea that, you know, the Warner Brothers execs or something, they probably have like weekly meetings about DCEU and how does this tie into this and spin-offs from the Peacemaker show, and oh, it's exhausting. And Matt Reeves comes and goes like, hey, listen, give me $120 million, I'll make a movie, and it'll make money, and they do that, and then it does. And it's like, oh God, thank God. Okay, Matt Reeves, here's another 180. Just make one movie, dude. Just make a movie, and we think that it will make money. Thank God, there's so much admin around the other stuff. Thank you, the Lord.
I mean, that is a good point. To be fair, which is like, there's a big push for everyone to do cinematic universes, but actually, what you see with stuff like the Joker and the Batman is that the cinematic universe doesn't necessarily matter if the film itself,
well,
is good and iconic.
I think the problem is the list of movies, the list of characters for that is Batman and Joker and checks notes. That's the end of the list. I'm looking at interesting. But hey, fine. You know, there we go. We've got one.
I mean, I'm thinking more of stuff like Godzilla and King Kong. Like, do they need to be cinematic universes? Probably not.
But I like the last one. I like to win the Hollow.
You're incorrect. Inside. You're incorrect.
Yeah.
Skull Island was great, and the rest are rubbish.
No, Skull Island's the bad one. Skull Island is so bad.
Are you mad? Are you mad?
God damn it! Because you know, King of the Monsters is a secret masterpiece.
That's definitely not true.
And Gareth Edwards' Godzilla 2012 or whatever is incredible.
That's the best one. That's the best one.
Yeah, and it sets up a cinematic
video. I cannot abide this.
the worst stuff about that series of movies was all of the shared universe stuff, all of the Hollow Earth bullshit. Like, if they'd literally just done a King Kong movie, a couple of Godzilla movies, and then gone, and then we'll put them both in the last one, that would have been fine. Yeah.
We don't need Monarch stitching it all together.
But what if there was a Hollow Earth, though? It's, you think about it, and it's intriguing.
That is an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, and I think we should get away from it as quickly as possible.
What if the Earth was full? Was not hollow, but actually full of stuff. Full with beans or whatever. Full.
Okay, we're going to move over to something less controversial. we talked about the Batman box office. Let's talk about the Morbius box office. Guys, have any of us seen Morbius yet? We're obviously all going to, because we're going to do an episode of the Patreon for our sins.
Yeah, I'm too scared. I'm way too scared. I can't. I don't want to. He's the living vampire. I'm to my bone. I'm chilled.
James?
I haven't had the time. I had to go and see Sonic 2 instead.
Yeah. He's not joking. No, I haven't yet. So, yeah, you know, take this with a pinch of salt. None of us have seen it, but the critics have, and they've bowled in with a 17% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not the be-all and end-all, obviously. But I would say the savagery of the reviews for Morbius so far have made me very excited to see it. I'm not even kidding. I saw them. I was like, "Fuck yeah!" Now I'm in for this. Like middle of the road bullshit. You'd be dragging me to it. Like, you're telling me this is hot garbage? Yes. Okay. But yeah, it's also done. Again, difficult to say, but it feels like fairly badly at the box office. It's looking like it's going to do about $40 million this weekend, which, again, not terrible, but it's not Marvel numbers, and it's not even like Venom numbers.
It's bad news for the Sony shared universe of Marvel characters.
Yeah, I'm fascinated for how this is going to unfold in the next couple of years, because you know we're going to get to other movies in this news breakdown that are in that shared universe, and
the Sony shared universe of Marvel characters.
Yeah, some of which are already filming, so you know they're zipping ahead. But as we said, like there's something so weird about Venom. Which
is successful,
and we all agree. We all agree, enjoyable to watch.
Sublime, incredible, Oscar winning.
But also, difficult to confidently say good. Either of them. Like, even the one that we think is more competent, maybe that makes it less good, I don't know. Going to be really interesting how they continue to stitch all this together, but I thought it's worth mentioning Michael Morbius, who, as we all know, is a living vampire.
This feels to me like the kind of chaotic promise of the Dark Universe finally realized in the Sony's universe of Marvel's Spider-Man's creative characterizations of heroes and villains universe.
That is a great point.
You know, like that picture, the iconic pic.
Yeah.
the madness that made us think thought about.
The iconic
chaos
picture
of scheduling.
Four middle-aged guys.
Yeah.
Looking and sort of confused about being in the same room,
let's see. Without spoiling, yes, of course, I've read the end credit scenes of Morbius. Of course, Reese has done that, and it does make me think, like, what the f, man? I'm kind of weirdly curious as to the nonsense of all this, and also crucially, obviously, how the hell it's gonna tie in or not tie in to Spider-Man, which Spider-Man, who Spider-Man, all the Spider-Man, it's what are the rights, what's going on, it's drama. I am a messy bitch who lives for drama, and this feels to me It appeals to me.
Okay, then, Reese, I've got something else that's going to appeal to you. Have either of you seen what Tyrese has posted on his Instagram this weekend?
No.
Right,
no.
This is amazing. It is a photoshopped picture of Martin Scorsese stood in front of the Morbius,
okay,
like, you know, like backdrop, and it says, okay, quotes, "I was aghast to find out it was based on a comic book. This is the truest height of cinema, and even I cannot top it. A wise man admits when he was wrong, and I was wrong. I apologize to all comic book movies." to which Tyrese has quoted, "Wow, wow, wow, I can't believe what's just happened. Whoa. Cheers and hats off to you, Daniel Espinosa. This is so amazing, King. This is the king of kings of cinema, Martin Scorsese. This is huge."
Do you think he genuinely doesn't know that that's a photo?
Yeah, he genuinely doesn't know.
Incredible.
He genuinely doesn't know that. He's just found this random tweet. His next is a screenshot of someone who's tweeted, "No offense to critics, but y'all wouldn't know a good movie if it bit your ass and turned you into Spider-Man. Morbius was amazing." So, you know, Tyrese is feeling good about his movie, at least. So that's nice.
Can
we all agree now? Me, Reese, James, you at home, the listener. Let's none of us tell Tyrese. Let's let him have it. Let's
well,
let
can
him
I tell
have
you?
It.
What, have got
no, no, can we just check?
Yeah, well, fine, agree. Fine,
yeah. I'm not going to do it, yeah. I'm not going to be the one.
Right, thanks,
here's
guys.
My biggest slam on Tyrese. I've read probably 3-4 reviews of this movie, of Morbius, you know, at the end of last week. As you just started talking, I had forgotten that Tyrese was in this. So that's a pretty bad slam. The reviews, I think, listen, I'm sorry, Tyrese. I feel like you have a small role in this movie.
Well. We'll get to it properly.
Yes, we will.
On a Patreon episode shortly.
Hey, that's £2.50 for that kind of delicious content.
Some Deadpool news. So we've known for a while that Deadpool was one of
cheeky.
Was the one comp. He is cheeky. He knows he's in the movie.
He's in Robin.
Deadpool was the one character who we were like certain straight away, because Kevin Feige said so, would enter the MCU in some capacity. Now, whether, you know, but whether that's interacting with the characters we know in the MCU or not, I'm sure it will be, but remains to be seen. But, you know, no news for the first year or so after that deal happened. But now apparently it is moving ahead. It's Deadpool 3. And it's got a director, and that director is the author who brought you Free Guy. It's Sean Levy.
Don't forget the Adam Project.
He did also bring us the Adam Project. Yeah.
Don't forget Real Steel. He brought us Real Steel.
So,
please.
Sean Levy is, I think, undeniably, with, you know, as a producer, a director, like, he gets shit made in Hollywood. He just does. And like you look at his career. He started, I guess, breakthrough with Just Married, Cheaper by the Dozen, The Pink Panther, makes the Night at the Museum movies. Real Steel is his first kind of action-y movie. Date Night, The Internship. He has a bit of a hand in Stranger Things. More recently has huge success with Free Guy, which is like, what, you know, one of these few like true pandemic success stories in Hollywood. Obviously another Ryan Reynolds project, and then the Adam Project, which showed up on Netflix the other week and seemed to be getting like a decent ish reception. But like, yeah,
and that's like, what if Ryan Reynolds was a widow boy? Is that that's the premise?
What if Ryan Reynolds was the Flight of the Navigator?
Yeah, what if Ryan Reynolds? Okay. But is it not? What if Ryan Reynolds teamed up with his younger self?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a bad film. It's a very bad film.
I haven't been moved to watch it. I was moved to watch Free Guy because it felt like something that was such a, like, it becomes such a big deal that I was like, well, I've got to see this thing. And I thought it was very uninspiring. But, like, he's obviously... he's obviously positioned himself as a someone who the Hollywood studios are like, yeah, this guy can make money. Like Free Guy was his first movie since Night of the Museum 3 in 2014. And then he's done that and the Adam Project back to back. But yeah, a guy who can make money, a guy who Ryan Reynolds obviously feels very comfortable with. And I do think there is an interesting phenomenon with these, like, you know, actors who reach like mega star status and a point in their career where they're like, all I want to do is not risk this. And right. they fight, you know, like
Tom Cruise with Macquarie
is the other. You do see like actors gravitate towards these kind of guys. And
hey, just don't make me look fat or old, please. I'm getting to the point where I'm getting a bit fat and a bit old, but I need to sell movie tickets to like 12-year-olds. Just come on, make me look cool.
I guess the more I think about this, when I first saw this, I was like, really, Sean, you're giving Sean Levy an MCU movie? But then I was like, well, the Deadpool movies, they're not the best looking. The first two movies aren't the two best looking movies in the world. I know they hired the John Wick guy for Deadpool 2, and I don't think that anyone kind of walks away from that going like, oh, it was so much better because the action felt bigger this time and less made in a computer. And so Sean Levy is the safe pair of hands. Mm-hmm. And I made the auto joke specifically because, you know, you probably don't need someone like that in a Deadpool movie because that is Ryan Reynolds. You know, star, producer, you know, with Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick is, you know, I think has probably had a hand in the writing of these movies as well, even if he's not directly credited. Like, the dialogue feels very Ryan Reynolds all the time, doesn't it?
Well, and obviously Deadpool himself, obviously, is...
Deadpool is a credited writer.
Of course he gets a credit. I mean, he's sort of doing shooting bad guys, but he's in the room. He's in the writer's room, for sure.
So, the more I think about it, the more I guess it probably makes sense. And
it's no worse a choice than any other choice would have been.
Because I think the flip side of this.
Julie did know.
Yeah. Sometimes they announce
during Deadpool 3. Deadpool now he's got a taste for human flesh, I guess.
I mean, sometimes they announce directors for these comic book movies, and you go, really? Why is that person directing a comic book movie? And
director of Blade, who directed Mogul Mowgli. I would give you as an example, like, oh, what? Okay.
Yeah, cool. Or J.C. Chandor directing The Kraven the Hunter movie.
Yeah, that one's wild.
Or Chloe Zhao directing Eternals, you know, like all of these exact, and you, like, at the end of the day, you wonder, like, you know, in some situations more than others, the MCU being that situation, like, how much can they actually bring to this? And so actually, Sean Levy, a guy who knows how to make movies at this scale, can get on well with Ryan Reynolds. Fine, I guess.
I think that's the level of enthusiasm we've put across.
Welcome to this podcast in 2022, James. I don't know. Have you been participating in the show? But, you know, the Deadpool 3... You know, that's sort of, it continues to be an interesting, you know, it's, I think we all still wonder, now it's been, you know, not just announced, but a director attached, it's happening, it's obviously happening pretty soon, if there's a director attached, you know, what is it going to be? Is it going to have dicks in it, and people get blown up?
Will Deadpool be
in the MCU? It's curious, right?
One of my concerns about them hiring Sean Levy is that the last two films, and to some extent his entire filmography, are very blandly family friendly, which is the one thing I don't want out of a Deadpool movie.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting what they do with it. I think that there is, when I look at the Marvel projects, I think that there are ways that they get around, like, you know, maybe there won't be a joke about his, hand feeling like a baby's hand when he's jerking himself off. But, you know, maybe there will still be outrageous jokes that they're just more, you know, more confident that they can get within a certain rating.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that, you know, putting some limits on the jokes they can attempt will make the humour funnier. Because that is certainly true in some cases.
Yeah.
I don't know what James thinks of this, but I wouldn't be shocked if there became a... Remember the Joker's Art of Marvel Knights, like, sub-brand in the 90s?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if... Oh, I'm not just surprised. I kind of think that they're almost going to be forced into creating something separate, right? Something that isn't the bum, 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 like something that says to audiences, this next movie or TV show you're about to watch, it's a bit more grown up, and, you know? It's within that world, but it's a bit more grown up.
You have to navigate. Maybe it's got like more
shredding guitar. It's maybe got the same tune, but it's like a shredding guitar.
They did do Marvel Knights as a movie studio imprint pre-MCU, I think.
I just when
Marvel Plus, Marvel After Dark.
Most of this stuff is increasingly being designed for. It's going to sit on Disney Plus for the rest of its existence, right? And you have to, you know, right now we can log on to Disney Plus and we can watch Daredevil torturing people's eyes, which we talked about a long time years ago about whether that would ever be possible. And yeah, they just put it on there. And, you know...
Well, we'll get to that.
And one of the big... Yeah, but one of the big releases this year for that platform, certainly in the UK, was Pam and Tommy.
Fresh. Oh, sure.
Well, and Fresh, yeah. And, you know, and like Fresh, that, right? Yeah. That content is just sitting on that platform. So I...
But isn't that? Aren't we the exception that you know? Like in the US, I don't think that's Disney Plus doesn't have
stats.
Like Hulu is the thing with that stuff on, and it's a separate app and a separate payments sub. And you know, if you're at Disney, I would have thought you're probably, you know, the star setup that we have here is probably not what is top of mind for how they think about, you know, mature content on the Disney streaming platform, etc. I'm not sure.
I think they did this week globally put on a film starring an anti-vaxxer, a cannibal, and and a conspiracy theorist, and they're like,
this is a Death on the Nile joke, which I'm here for. I enjoyed that. Yep, fun.
Look down that cast list, and you're like, shit, it literally gets. You're like, I mean, obviously, like, you were never the most confident with him, but no, yeah, Russell Brand got achieved like full cancellation the week before this drops on Disney Plus. You're like,
you get to Dawn French. You're like, what? Oh my god, what did she do? She must have done something. Like, I'm now on worried for her. Did she throw a dog into the Thames?
Gal Gadot is one of the least problematic people in this cast right now.
Yes, and she's the author of the Imagine video. I mean, I don't know what's going on.
So, anyway, what we're talking about. Deadpool 3 coming to Disney Plus in 2024. Let's move on. James, I'm going to give you an opportunity to celebrate now, to gloat a little bit. And also, I think this ties in very nicely with the last piece of news. Very likely that in the next few years, also arriving on Disney Plus will be Dick Ryder.
Richard Ryder, yes.
Do you say Vic Ryder?
Dick Ryder.
Oh, okay. He just got his name wrong. Vic Ryder. That's his badass brother with a leather jacket.
Apparently Marvel are developing a Nova project, which is being developed by Moon Knight writer Sabir Pizarda. No details on whether it would be a movie or a Disney Plus series, but my guess would be movie. What do you guys think?
I would expect a movie. Again, this is, for those who don't know, we did a Patreon episode where we had predictions for this year, and in the section where we predicted what would be announced from Marvel this year, my pick was a Nova project.
What did I predict, James? I can't remember.
I can't remember.
Certainly hasn't been. Certainly hasn't been announced yet. I'll tell you.
I think it's wild because I predicted that Morbius would hit an 85 million global bow opening weekend. So that's. I mean, I have to take full credit for that. Oh wait, I wasn't on the episode.
You were asleep.
But yeah, I think yeah, a movie makes sense. The most of the reports say it's going to be Richard Rider, but it's hard to tell whether that's them just inferring from the fact that it's a Nova project there'll be Richard Rider, because in sort of recent years Marvel created a new Nova called Sam Alexander, who his backstory seems to fit the MCU a lot more, in that it's kind of like if the Green Lantern Corps were wiped out and there was just one of them left. Because in, you know, the Nova Corps operate in the same sort of space police area as the Green Lantern Corps in the DC universe.
Well, and we've speculated about this for a while, right? That the reason Nova has made sense as a potential project is we met the Nova Corps. They're established in the MCU, and off screen, the planet that they are based on was presumably leveled by Thanos, because that's where he got the one Infinity Stone that we didn't see him collect. Yeah,
exactly. There's definitely a flashback waiting to happen there.
So, you know, it makes sense that, you know, we get a flashback of like a dying John C. Reilly and,
and the wife herself, Glenn Close.
And Glenn Close, yeah.
The wife back.
Yeah. And that wig.
Maybe she could have the Albert Nobbs wig instead. Like that's not, you know, that's at that time she was more Albert Nobbs up. That would be fun.
Sure. Yeah. you can pitch that to Sabir Pizarda.
I'm going to walk there right now. She lives around the corner.
But I would be surprised if someone's just read a Wikipedia article when a Marvel, this is Justin Kroll at Deadline. I think someone has briefed them that that's what's been developed. That it is.
I think even if it's Richard Rider's name, I think it's going to be the Sam Alexander story.
Yes, which wouldn't be surprising. Or you know that like it is like a father and son story that there's two of them left rather than one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would I think Nova feels like a no brainer for the MCU. Like if you'd have told me 3 or 4 years ago that we'd be getting Moon Knight before we got Nova, I would have been stunned, but here we are.
Well, I think there's also, I think there's a question, well, not question mark, but James Gunn has totally owned all of the sort of space stuff, basically, since Guardians. And I'd probably presume that he won't really be involved with MCU after Guardians 3.
Yeah.
So I think there's a, and maybe some of those characters will get broadly, sunsetted. So you could see Nova, whatever version of Nova is, and whatever movie or TV show this is, and the shepherd of it, there'll need to be someone taking a bit of ownership, I think, of the space stuff going, post James Gunn, I think.
And you'd imagine that there's going to be a lot more space stuff than there has been as well. I think the Marvels is probably going to be space set, Secret Invasion.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think Secret Invasion as well, right, is going to have spacey elements to it. It would make sense that after we're done with the Guardians that there is a replacement for that.
Is there an obvious like successor to the Guardians space franchise that could kind of pop in after Guardians 3?
I think if I was gonna carry on,
I don't know if you've heard about the Eternals.
Oh shit! I think you mean just Eternals. Drop the there; it's cleaner. Yeah, I have heard about Eternals. I guess it's that, isn't it?
Well, to a point, okay. I think.
End of conversation. Goodbye.
It's Harry Styles, baby.
I think you can just keep doing the Guardians and change the lineup because, it's not much of a established property outside the movies. Like, one of the things that the comics do is rotate the lineups of teams in and out, and that might be a good test case for, you know, the upcoming Avengers version, maybe, which is going to lack a lot of the key players. You know, how much can they actually get away with? If they call it Guardians, are people still going to turn up if Chris Pratt isn't there? Who knows?
Yes.
I think so too, but who knows?
Okay, so next piece of news, same with the MCU. This is, we don't need to discuss this for too long, but I'd just like to take a minute to appreciate that the Doctor Strange in and the Multiverse of Madness running time is 2 hours and 6 minutes.
2 hours and 6 minutes, that's ridiculous. Did they run out of money or something? you can't call that a movie.
I think if you'd have said to me, how long do you want the Doctor Strange sequel to be, I'd go, well, Multiverse of Madness sounds like there's a lot of shit going on there. So, I mean, you know, I'm going to let you go over like 90, 100 minutes. I don't want another three. Just around, just over 2 hours? 2 hours? 2 hours 15 max. Yep. 2 hours six. Yeah, baby, I'm in for it. Yep. 2 hours six sounds great.
Doesn't it? Doesn't it just?
But, you know, okay, conspiracy theory time.
What? Come on.
Well, you know.
The Earth is not hollow, Reese.
you know, lots of. I know that they all do reshoots, but comments about the reshoots of this movie over the past X and how, you know, wouldn't they all love for Multiverse to be a Spider-Man 3 level success, of course. The Patrick Stewart in the trailer, all that sort of shit, you know, and the Sam Raimi of it all, it, from the off, you know, feeling like, is he not going to get subsumed by this? Isn't he too auteurist of a director to actually live in this world? I just wonder, you know, 2006, I think also, if you're a conspiracy theorist, you go, oh, okay, so this movie, this had problems and they have had to piece together something, and we've just gotten to 2006, which is probably what 12 minutes of credit. So
I think that is as much of a stretch as the deleted section of our Patreon episode where you suggested that in fact was not Patrick Stewart, and actually you thought that it would be James McAvoy in the movie.
Do you know, just while we're on that, since we mentioned that, he has flatly denied that he is playing Professor X in the movie.
I know, I've denied it.
Who's denied it? McAvoy?
James McAvoy, yeah. Yeah, someone asked him on Instagram Live or something, like, do you miss playing Professor X? And he was like, no.
I just thought it was worth mentioning at that moment when James said, when Reese mentioned the trailer with Patrick Stewart in it. I was like, okay, it's worth mentioning that we had the most insane conversation where Reese was like, the fact that that sounds like his voice might be a misdirect.
We can't all be right 100% of the time.
We can't all be sober 100% of the time either. Okay, I'm going to stick with the MCU bits of news. Now, this I had to check was, I made Reese and James both Google this separately to check that this was actual news and not something that had just been made up for April Fools. That has made gathering news for this episode even more tricky than it normally would be. Apparently, Michael Giacchino is directing the Werewolf by Night Halloween special for Disney Plus. Which, so, you know, this is the Werewolf by Night, or the as I call it, the Jack Russell project, which, you know, starring Gael Garcia Bernal, is going to be like a one-off Halloween special, is being directed by Michael Giacchino, who is obviously the, you know, he's a composer. He's not directed anything to my knowledge before. He's the guy who composed the fanfare that we see at the start of all of the Marvel projects. He did the score for the Batman. He's great. I love Michael Giacchino. He's a great composer. I'm just completely caught off guard by the news that he's directing this thing.
In fairness, he has directed a Short Trek.
Oh,
do you know what the Short Treks are?
I'm assuming Star Trek, but shorter.
Star Trek Minisodes, they are. He did one of those in 2019.
Okay.
For me, this is possibly like proper like dystopian like end of cinema news story. Because you guys see the New York Times Ross Douthat article about, I've just brought it up now. We aren't just, well, the headline is, we aren't just watching the decline of the Oscars, we're watching the end of the movies. This was just before the Oscars last week. And it was, you know, he was fairly negative on film and on cinema as a medium. But, you know, well, it was mocked, etc. But in a way, this is a bit dystopian. You know, Michael Giacchino, like, for listeners, as a reminder, Joe, you walked down the aisle to Michael Giacchino music.
Well, I didn't. My wife did. I was stood at the top.
Yeah, you were there. I believe you were there. but this is a very successful, very impressive, influential composer. And just the idea that the next steps for him are, yeah, I think in this industry, I think for me, the best next steps are to direct the Werewolf by Night Halloween special. It's just
bonkers.
I hate it. I kind of hate it.
I just don't understand it. Like,
well, he wants to, you know, what's the equivalent? Wally Pfister directing Transcendence?
Oh God!
Like, you know,
oh.
You know. Well, maybe it is. This is not that. It's not that uncommon to have sort of people quite high up the.
I was going to say,
moving into direction. But, right? That's not
cinematographer that moving to direction feels like less of a leap than composer.
I was thinking Simon Kinberg. Moving from producer to director.
Mm-hmm. Oh God! Stop naming these terrible movies. I hope he has a nice time, and that Werewolf by Night is watchable, but that he broadly just goes back and continues doing his music.
It does.
Nice.
It does seem unlikely that he can be as accomplished a director as he is a composer. Yeah. But until he's tried it, we don't know.
I'm trying to think of anybody I can think of that had separate, you know, like John Carpenter sort of obviously sort of jumps to mind as a very important movie music composer and director, but they were so in parallel. He was basically just composing music for his own movies. I'm trying to think, I mean, listeners.
I think
chime in, but I don't think I can think of anybody.
I mean, in comics, there are plenty of examples of people switching disciplines. Like, you get, you know, colorists who become writers, artists who become writers, you get salespeople who become writers, you know, Peter David, very famous and accomplished comic writer, you know, started out in the sales department and, you know, ended up on a book basically by pitching to editors and getting stuff that no one else wanted. Like, it's not impossible to switch disciplines. I think it'll be a loss to composing overall if he becomes a mid-range director, but maybe he'll be great. Who knows?
You know, and Wally Pfister, of course, who was a incredible cinematographer before he made that movie, and then has he made anything since? Is he just like, has he just been in director/cinematographer's jail since Transcendence came out? I think he has.
I don't know if there is a cinematographer's jail. Maybe it's just after he's done that, he's like, well, I can't be bothered anymore.
They just closed the aperture, right? They just shut the thing at the front of the camera. That's the equivalent of cinematographer's jail. What's it called, though? That was a good joke, but I couldn't think of what it was called. What's the thing called? The shutter? The thing at the front of the camera? The clicker, right?
The shutter, right?
The shutter, yeah. Okay, the shutter, fine. Know. I'll take it.
Okay, so yeah, Michael Giacchino is directing the Werewolf by Night.
Jesus Christ. Fuck. End the podcast now? Can we just walk away from that?
I should say I don't think that we are in like the end times of a medium. I just think we are in we are in the like insane oversaturated point of a medium, and there is a lot of shit being churned out. I doubt my top 10 movies of 2021 are like significantly worse or significantly different than my top 10 movies of 2011. I still think that there is still good stuff being made and interesting stuff being made. It's just a weird, weird time for the industry as it tries to get its head around streaming and the kind of the growth of television that preceded it. It's just a very weird time. There were still good movies last year. There were good movies that were nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. A good one didn't win, but
Yeah, there are still good movies this year. You know, Sonic 2. James, you saw this today, right? They're still making the good stuff.
We'll get to it. Last little bit of Marvel news. Apparently, Martin Freeman's going to be in Secret Invasion. So nice to know that he's still getting a Marvel check. Can you remember the name of his character, Reese?
Christopher Smithsonson, I believe. No, to be fair, I was going to say Rupert Everett. No, it's not that either. Everett Ross?
Yeah, nice.
I only remember that because he's a comics character, to be fair.
I wonder if he's going to be in Black Panther 2. Surely not, right? Or is he?
I think he's been announced, and I think he is in.
Is he?
Yeah.
Just feels...
He's the new Black Panther. He's the lead. I don't know if you might have missed that.
Twist!
That was before Chadwick Boseman died. Like, it was actually... Google was like, why don't we make the white guy the main character, I think? That is the next step for Wakanda.
So anyway, he's in Secret Invasion, which feels like a good fit for that character. You know, if you're going to call in your MCU favors, right? We need to bring this back. Do we think... Everett Ross is a Skrull.
Yes. Ooh, that would be good. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna say yeah as well.
Yeah.
I like a Skrull because you know we've seen so little from him really, so that feels like a real easy win as a Skrull.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then before we move off of the MCU corner, James, you alluded to this earlier. I'm not sure whether this... I don't think this was announced. I think someone just spotted it. Disney Plus has edited Falcon and the Winter Soldier to remove some of the blood and violence, which we can talk about the actual context of this in the first place. It's hilarious to watch some of the clips that they have edited. Like, removing some blood splatter, fine. One of the most intense, like, violent sequences in that show that we talked about is in the, like, unhinged episode from the John Wick writer.
The one set in Madripoor, yeah.
Yeah, the one set in Madripoor, where they're fighting outside of the storage containers, and... the one shot that I saw going around Twitter of Bucky spearing someone with a metal pipe into one of the containers has now been re-edited so the metal pipe bounces off them, but the person is still visibly pinned by something back against the container. Because you can't edit around something like that. It just looks how it looks, and it's wild, but not surprising that Disney are doing this, I guess.
Well, the thing that I find sort of interesting about it is this was custom made for Disney Plus in the first instance.
Mm, yes, yeah.
So, like, are they changing their guidelines? Are they just enforcing them more rigorously? Like, what's going on there? It's strange.
I wonder if it's something around, like, even parental controls that, like,
yeah,
stuff will show up on the homepage or stuff will show up if your account on Disney Plus is set to that content level. And so it just, by removing those bits of stuff, it puts it in front of a wider audience. It's just, I guess what's interesting to me, it's like stuff like this and the edits to Splash where they extended Daryl Hannah's hair to cover her bum. I wonder how many of these we just don't spot. And not even just on streaming services now, you know, that like...
I was going to say, the edits studios, made to No Way Home after it was released.
Yeah, and movie studios can do this now. They just update... Reese, you work in a cinema. They just update the file, right? And
they do, yes.
And then the movie's changed.
Yep.
It would be nice if they could make Morbius into a good movie before we see it.
They might.
Yeah, what if audiences love Morbius, so they're like, well, I guess they must have changed the file, you know, after the critics review. But the bit, the Disney Plus Falcon stuff ties into our previous chat about Deadpool or, you know, the Daredevil show. It doesn't feel joined up thinking. I continue to be confused by, you know, so what is it? Is Disney Plus just for kids? which is fine if that was nice and clear. But again, in the UK, you've got stuff like Fresh on there, which has Daisy Edgar Jones getting, you know, chomped on by Sebastian Stan, in a movie, it's not a documentary. And then you've got...
I'd watch both.
Sure. And then you've
so
got
would Army Hammer.
The announcement, right? And sure, Sean Levy directed. I still think that will be adult tinge. So just... This feels like probably something that we are in between sort of settings or app updates on Disney Plus. Like that, you know, in a year's time, I'm sure Disney would like it to be clearer what's the version of that content that is for kids and is the Disney brand, the sort of pure Disney brand, and what bucket all the other stuff lives in. But right now, when things are, when movies, you know, TV shows are getting just updated seemingly randomly to delete, you know, a violent scene, it's just a bit random. And that feels quite unlike, you know, a big corporate entity like Disney to just do things randomly without,
it does,
without messaging out what's happening and why.
Have you guys read any of the stuff around the Bobs, Iger and Chapek, in recent weeks? With
no,
so no? I recommend, you know, to you and our listeners, it's really interesting some of the stuff that has come out around like the handover from Bob Iger and how it was kind of initially delayed, or he like said that he would stick around for a little bit longer when the pandemic hit, and that basically broke the relationship with Chapek, who thought he was trying to muscle in. And despite Iger kind of like sticking around at Disney for longer, basically they weren't talking for that entire period of time, and that it led to some like high profile flubs from Disney from a PR perspective, and the Scarlett Johansson, the way the Scarlett Johansson lawsuit was handled was referenced as part of that. So yeah, it does sound like a company that at a big global corporate level has had somewhat of an identity crisis over the past couple of years, and also, as has been evidenced by their response to the Don't Say Gay laws in Florida, that Chapek isn't necessarily covering himself in glory with the way that the company responds to this kind of stuff. So yeah, that's all interesting.
I think sometimes we forget that even in huge, you know, huge corporations, some of the biggest in the world, entertainment or otherwise, there often is a, you know, a man. Unfortunately, it is a man often. In that top leadership role, that and depending on who that man is and their values and thoughts, things happen differently. I kind of think that's, your gut would go, oh no, like Apple or Disney will just be Apple or Disney, but actually, whether it's, you know,
one very powerful person being bad at their job can have a
being bad at that job, but that's exactly right, that can have impact and can impact things that we as just but mere lowly consumers, I just want to watch the, you know, the Mickey Mouse cartoon.
Reese, we've got a podcast.
Sorry,
just anyone.
We're renovated, folks. We have a podcast and actually a Patreon. I don't know if you guys have heard £2.50. We are obviously, you know, strong people, but you know, most people are normos.
Yeah. I just one final thought on this. I do feel like, and I think the opportunity has been and gone now, but.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think the advent of the streaming era, there has been a real missed opportunity of re-looking at, you know, the language, sex, violence, other, and what constitutes mature consent, what are the age ratings. And I know bodies like the BBFC try to evolve over time, and the MPAA had, well, you know, certainly the Hays Code in America was pretty much abolished in the late 60s, mm-hmm. 70s when filmmakers rebelled. So, you know, there are opportunities to change this over time. But, like, I this for me is a perfect example of how our maturity ratings for content is broken. That, you know, you can go, let's depict the exact same stuff but have less blood splatter, or, you know, let's have someone throw a pipe at someone and then be pinned to a surface, but we see the pipe bounce away, and that's okay, and that someone 2 or 3 years younger can now watch this. Mm. as if violence with no consequences
is worse than morally acceptable.
Yeah, I've always found it wild. I've always found it wild that, you know, certain swear words are so much worse than others. And, like, I mean, for me, I'm gonna drop a couple here, but, like, I've always thought that there is, like, an ingrained misogyny to the fact that, you know, calling someone a cock or a dick is so much less offensive than calling someone a pussy or a cunt, you know? Like,
oh my God.
Jesus
Christ, Joe, please.
That seems wild to me. It seems wild to me that, you know, that again, like the misogyny of female nudity being so much more objectionable than male nudity, that, like, the only thing that you can't see on a man is their penis, but that, like, everything else is fair game. And you know, and their relationship with each other, that sex and nudity is worse than the violence and the language that you can put into, like, a 12A/PG-13 movie versus what level of nudity you could. Like, when nudity is just a natural thing, whereas violence actually, you know, has, like...
I was going to say, on this topic, one of my sort of pie-in-the-sky wishes for, you know, if we can't fix the gun laws in America, how about we just make a law that if someone gets shot in a movie, it has to look realistic? Like, if you want to use a gun in your film, that's fine. Portray the consequences accurately. Like, whether that means, you know, if that means taking a chunk out of someone's head, fair enough. Show it. Show it if you have to. And if not, maybe don't use a gun.
That kind of comes back to my frustrations with all this stuff as well, is that, you know, like, it's so much more than, like, okay, how many swear words in this movie do we have? What part of a human's body have we shown? Like, it's all about the context, right? And it's all about, like, you know, a sex scene, depending on the sex scene, can be, like, radically different in how appropriate it is for people of different ages. I think we've missed the opportunity, and I think this is a great example of, like, we are just, you know, sinking deeper and deeper into the same retrograde systems, even though all of this stuff is now in the Wild West of the internet rather than in a movie studio or being, you know, broadcast on television. It's weird. Anyway, we'll stick with some Marvel stuff. But we'll do the Spider-Man extended. What's it called, Reese?
The Sony extended universe of Marvel characters.
Marvel characters in a Sony branded PlayStation God of War influenced content pipeline production film.
Why don't we call it the
video game?
Why don't we call it the Marvio extended universe?
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the Sony Aibo dogs, like the dogs.
I just think, you know, that there's some corporate synergy that can be worked in there.
Yeah. I like it. For me.
Anyway, I don't think we're going to be able to say much about this because, whisper it.
Yeah. Give us 45 minutes. We'll fill some time.
James is very old, but Reese and I are still old. Sydney Sweeney has been cast in Madame Web. Have you guys seen anything with Sydney Sweeney? And she's big with the teens.
Nope.
I've seen a headline referencing the fact that her grandparents said she had the best tits in Hollywood.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing, by the way.
I just checked. She's 24. Okay. Sorry, I was looking at a picture of her and I was just like, I'm not so sure we can say that.
Wait, she's best known for Euphoria. She was in The White Lotus and apparently The Handmaid's Tale. I don't know, but she's a big deal right now. She's going to be in the Madame Web movie, which
fuck's sake,
is, which is not happening. Sake. That's not happening.
What is this thing?
So
Morbius is coming out. Craven feels like it's filming this Madame Web. What is happening?
Okay, so Craven is filming, and Oscar winner Ariana DeBose has been cast as Calypso in that movie. So just a reminder that this is the Craven the Hunter movie, directed by J.C. Chandor, starring Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and now Oscar winner Ariana DeBose.
And Russell Crowe! And Ariana! The cast is crazy good! Mad.
James, when I said when I mentioned the character Calypso to him pre-record, was like, I don't think I've heard of that character. Well, let me tell you that she is a voodoo priestess who utilizes magic potions, and besides being an adversary of Spider-Man, is the occasional partner and lover of Kraven. That sounds not at all problematic. But yeah, a voodoo priestess is being added to Kraven the Hunter. Wow, they're plowing ahead with these things. Fair play.
I realized recently she's actually in Kraven's Last Hunt, so I was aware of her. I just forgot what's that character. Just quickly on Madame Web, it is insane. It's openly insane that they're on about making this movie. it's hard to even say. It's like making a Zordon movie instead of a Power Rangers movie. Like, is that insane?
But it's obviously, because Madame Web was back in the, it was one of the characters knocking around back in the Sony Leaks days, wasn't it? So
yeah,
I feel like, you know how I feel like now we're talking about this stuff, it's how people who are really into, I don't know, Top Gun or Mission Impossible felt like in 2007 or 6 when they were announcing, they've got Robert Downey Jr. for Iron Man, and they're going to do an Avengers movie, and they're going to have all these characters team up. And people, you know, were like, no, it's never going to work. Crazy. I don't think this will work, but I kind of empathize with people that didn't think that was going to work, because I feel that now. With all this, like, stupid, like, oh, it's going to be Morbius and Venom and Michael Keaton's Vulture and Madame Web and Kraven times two. And and they're all going to team up and it's going to be multiverse. It's just crazy. But I get now people who thought that the MCU stuff was crazy back in, 2007. But it's crazy.
Yeah.
We forgot Silk on Amazon Prime. Joey, you forgot to, you know, remind us that they're doing a Silk TV show.
I just forgot. Is that a thing that we already knew was happening?
Yes, it's happening. Yeah. They're doing a Silk TV show. Crazy, absolutely crazy.
Great. Okay, let's get back to more normal casting chat. Sharon Stone has been cast as the villain in Blue Beetle.
Just a normal thing, a normal headline that everyone can relate to.
The Blue Beetle movie, I guess, was just one of those that I kept kind of assuming wouldn't actually happen. I don't know. Like, it felt like one of those that was like knocking around on the edges. But I think we're officially in the, it's just open season. If so, like it used to be, a movie gets announced, so like, oh yeah, let's see if that actually comes to fruition. Now it's like, I guess there's a 10% chance they don't move forward with that. Like, because we need stuff for streaming services as well as theaters, and you can spend just as much as the stuff on the stuff for the streaming service. So, so Sharon Stone is apparently apparently joining Blue Beetle as the villain, who will be Victoria Cord. Now, I know there's a Ted Cord, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what relation to Ted Cord is Victoria?
Wish I could tell you. Ted Cord is the original Blue Beetle, right?
Yes. Yep.
So we can assume Victoria Cord is, I'm going to say, probably a sister. Let's look it up, shall we?
Or mum, or wife.
Or daughter. Or wife,
yeah.
Or daughter, or granddaughter, or grandniece.
I'm not finding a lot. a lot of background here.
Could she just... Could Oh, right. Do you know what? The article I'm reading is saying there is no record of the character with the name Victoria Cord. Mm. So could it... I wonder, could it be that she is...
A gender-swapped Ted Cord,
she's like the original Blue Beetle who is now the villain in this one.
Yeah, because you could, you know, actually, you know, Ted extends to Edward, and Edward and Victoria are, you know, kind of, I think, equivalent names.
Are they?
You know, if you were going to... Well, yeah.
I mean, they're both sort of royal names, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're getting at here.
Yeah, yeah. You could see an Edward becoming a Victoria, Joe, I'm afraid.
Anyway, I think...
That makes sense.
We've previously mentioned that they cast, and I believe that this is pronounced, Zolo Mariduena, who is the lead kid on Cobra Kai, as Jamie Reyes, and I really like him on Cobra Kai. I think he's my favorite thing about that show.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like good casting. And I remember that like Seb used to be like quite pro Blue Beetle, and that Jamie, and that there has been good Jamie. Is it Jamie or Jaime Reyes?
Jaime Reyes.
That there's been good like Spider-Man-esque like teenager, you know, finding their way as a superhero vibes to that character in comics in the past, so that this might be, you know, this might be quite an interesting project as they go. And Sharon Stone as a villain, obviously, you know, just bringing back some of those Catwoman vibes that we enjoyed so much. She's good in Catwoman.
She's good in Catwoman. Yeah,
good as a comic book villain.
Yep.
James, you don't seem to want to weigh in too much on this.
I just, there are certain DC characters I can really get on board with. And there are some I've just never really seen the appeal of. And I think Blue Beetle sort of falls into that category for me. Mm. I think it's possibly, this is maybe a bit sort of off-pieced, but Blue Beetle was a superhero from a different comics company, from Charlton Comics, who got sort of folded into the DC universe later on. Maybe I just don't care about those guys. Because, you know, I can, to some degree, I can always get hyped about a Batman or a Superman or a Wonder Woman or even Green Lantern, but Blue Beetle, does nothing for me.
Isn't Blue Beetle then, you know, speaking on to that, he was from Charlton before, isn't he the basis of Night Owl in Watchmen?
He is, yeah.
Alan Moore, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense.
That's correct.
And I just looking at this on IMDb, it's been directed, a guy who I haven't seen any of his other stuff, but Angel Manuel Soto, and it looks like it has a predominantly Latinx cast outside of Sharon Stone that's been announced so far. So that's interesting as well. And yeah, I don't know. I guess looking at this written down on paper, the Blue Beetle movie moves the dial more for me than any of that Sony stuff that we've been talking about.
Interesting, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. It is another thing that is happening. Okay, last couple of bits of news now. I am told that Irredeemable and Incorruptible are being adapted as one live-action movie by Netflix. That's all I know. Rhys and James are going to explain it to me.
Rhys, did you read either of these series?
I think I read like the first issue of Irredeemable, yes.
Yeah, so Irredeemable, correct me if I get any of this wrong, Rhys, but Irredeemable was...
Sure, I read one issue, fine, yeah. I'm the authority on this
now.
It
was a sort of Invincible style, you know, off-brand superhero universe. The twist on this was it was about a good guy who went bad.
Yeah.
So it was the Plutonian, I believe. The Plutonian.
Correct.
Is, you know, that Earth Superman.
Yeah.
And goes on a killing spree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about people trying to take him down. And I believe Incorruptible was the inverse of that twist. And it was about a superhero who was trying to, a supervillain, sorry. He was trying to redeem himself and become a superhero.
To take down the Plutonian.
The Plutonian, yeah. And
James, do you know the name of the character who starred in Incorruptible? It's a cool name.
It was like Max Power or something, wasn't it?
Max Damage,
that's great. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and these books were written by Mark Waid at a time when his sort of cachet as a writer was at its peak. Like he was...
Yep.
Yeah, considered a pretty, I would say, he wasn't like a hot Alan Moore type writer, but he was, you know, a safe, desired writer.
I'd say this was like post Mark Miller and his success, but and obviously another Mark, and a, you know, British Mark, with a similarly kind of, what's the phrase?
High concept.
High concept, exactly. Yeah, right, on a superhero story. But asterisk, Mark Waid is a better
writer. It is actually good,
yeah. Exactly, right. So I think, you know, if you're Netflix and you're like, oh, this Mark Miller guy sucks. But can we find anyone else with any other IP that sort of was doing the same thing? I kind of feel like this is that. It's high concept superhero stuff, but with more ramp there from the, you know, from the source material, from a better writer. And I think, James, there was quite a lot of Irredeemable, and there was a decent chunk of Incorruptible. So there's actually quite a lot there to adapt.
They both ran about 30, 40 issues, I think. I didn't read a lot of them because it just sort of wasn't my thing, because off-brand superheroes never really do it for me. But I can completely see why if you're a streaming service, you only had Miller World in your pocket and you saw what was happening with, for example, the Invincible cartoon, you might go, well, what's similar to that?
Okay, so
they have to be regretting that
the Miller World thing.
I've been Googling this in the background, and so far everything you said to me has made me think, yeah, okay, that sounds like the kind of, you know, the streaming era, like, off-brand superhero filler that will probably be rubbish and I won't watch.
Yeah.
I'm reading on the Wikipedia page. We might have talked about this 6 years ago on the podcast, because in 2016,
Adam McKay.
It was announced that Adam McKay was going to be directing it with a script by Tommy Vercola, obviously the writer and director of Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. But that this version is being produced by Jay-Z and is being directed by James Samuel, who directed The Harder They Fall last year. Now I'm a little bit more interested. That sounds like maybe they've got something here. It's being written by a guy called Kemp Powers, who James, for you, he wrote 5 episodes of Star Trek Discovery.
That's not a good endorsement.
He was a writer on he wrote One Night in Miami, was a co-writer on Soul, and is a co-director of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse parts 1 and 2. So that creative team, I'm suddenly like, huh, okay, right. I would also be very surprised if the Plutonian's a white guy.
I just think even the best version of this story is going to feel like Superman fan fiction. The same way Invincible does it. I just
think so much of this off-brand superhero stuff fails at the first hurdle because it feels so cheap. It looks so cheap. And everything has that off-brand feel, like with like in a way that like an original superhero or an original movie that wasn't based in a comic, you probably think they wouldn't do it as cheap. Like it's like, oh well, how do we recreate that design from the comic?
But that's off-brand to begin with. This is the thing. This is a Superman story. This story is a what if Superman was evil story. Like it doesn't fulfill any other purpose other than to be what if Superman wasn't a good guy, right? And that's why it just feels like, oh well, we've seen that done 10, 15 times before anyway.
Yeah, I remember at the time that the incorruptible piece of it was felt like it caught people's attention a bit more weirdly. Like the irredeemable comic was a kind of a quick. Quick success, but tailed off a bit. Whereas I think the incorruptible side, perhaps that feels a little bit less well trodden, right? Like what happens if a true supervillain's world is changed so much by their arch enemy that they from that feel like they need to redeem themselves? Like there's something there. There is something there that I feel like could be fresh for whatever this thing turns out to be. Yeah, but I agree with you that they. You know, the boys coming into season 3, season 4, like that, you know, at the very least, the boys has very much covered evil Superman. Like that is a current thing that's running that is doing that.
Yeah, well, and Invincible, right? Like it's.
Yeah, you know, sure.
It's just, it's been done.
And.
Brightburn.
And that one, and that one scene in Justice League.
Hancock.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Wow. current biting satire from James there.
I do think that's a, you know, as the superhero genre, I mean, it's grown already, right? It's sort of, it's a done deal, but over the last, well, I guess, whatever, 20 years, it has become such a dominant force. And that, just that question in audiences' minds of, you know, with ultimate power, why are those people good, and what happens if they turn bad? I get that that's a potent. I get
it's
that's
a potent premise.
Question.
It rarely results in a story that is as interesting as that idea.
Agreed. I also find like it's kind of funny with James with all the sort of the recent-ish gubbins about Marvel Man, right? Miracle Man, all those storylines. Like, you know, in a way that the Miracle Man story in the 80s was one of the earlier. Sort of major storyline to deal with this kind of stuff, right? And that makes it important or relevant. But the fact that Marvel are like, oh, we need to, you know, bring that all that back and dredge all that stuff up, and it's like, No, well, I don't know. We've now done that 50 times in the last 10 years. We don't need that to be dredged up and rewarmed because we're covering that across the board. But again, I'll make my point again. On the flip side of it, the incorruptible piece feels fresher, and I think intrigues me a bit more.
What if
the Joker? What if Barry Keoghan, as the Joker, thought he, you know, and the Batman started murdering people on the streets of Gotham? What if Barry Keoghan, as the Joker, wanted to become a good guy? And what would that journey look like? Feels a bit fresh. A bit fresh.
Yeah, I think certainly in cinematic terms, that is a fresher angle. What I sort of think is, why doesn't someone do a what if Superman was actually just a nice guy and play that straight for a fucking change? Just genuinely give us an all-star Superman influence take on the character instead of the dark and brooding, like, I have such a burden to carry version. Maybe one day.
Okay. Final piece of news. It feels like we should mention this. I don't know how much we can comment, but Ezra Miller has been in trouble again. He has had a temporary restraining order granted against him after he allegedly burst into a couple's room and made threats against them. The quote that has circulated is him saying, "I will bury you and your slut wife."
I did not know that part.
He was also accused of stealing some of their belongings, including a passport. This is on Hawaii's Big Island, and he's had this temporary restraining order placed against him. We've obviously mentioned quite a few times on the podcast that the Ezra Miller
choking a woman
videoed choking a woman felt like one of those things that was captured and then just kind of went away, which felt odd in this, you know, in this cancellation this era.
Of cancellations,
yeah. And
you can be cancelled for as little as punching a comedian in the face.
I'm not sure how much there is we can say about that. Obviously, you know, there are allegations and it's an ongoing thing. But it doesn't look great for Ezra Miller. And James, before this news broke, I was sharing a tweet this week, which was like saying like quite how much shit has gone down since Ezra Miller was cast as the Flash. He was he was cast as the Flash in October 2014.
The
Wikipedia page for the Flash movie is wild. It says in the intro, the development of a film based on the Flash began in 2004. It takes you through a version. You know, obviously the plans to do the Justice League Mortal, where Adam Brody was cast as the Flash, and George Miller was going to direct, and then, you know, like, it all gets rethought in 2014 when they bring in Ezra Miller, and it's going to be part of the DCEU, and they're going to release originally planned to release a Flash movie in 2016. That doesn't happen. Then it gets pushed back to 2018. It was going to be directed by Seth Graham Smith at one point. It was going to be directed by Rick Famuyiwa. It had a different, you know, Billy Crudup was originally Henry Allen and is Henry Allen in both cuts of Justice League, but won't be Henry Allen in this movie. Robert Zemeckis was rumored to be directing it for a while. Now it has shot, it's in post-production and is due to come out later this year, directed by Andy Muschietti. And now this Ezra Miller stuff is coming out. And sorry, it got pushed back
next year. That's what you said.
But yeah, and now this has happened. And like, you know, in the meantime, he's been in Am I right in thinking the first thing he showed up in was the Suicide Suicide Squad?
Was he in that?
He's in Batman v Superman in a cameo, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's in the first Suicide Squad movie in a Captain Boomerang flashback.
Is he?
Okay. Yeah, like in a one scene. Maybe that was after Batman v Superman. Then obviously he's in Justice League. And then he's in
the Flash TV show.
The Snyder Cut. And then I think he's had two different cameos on the Flash TV show. And all of this is happening, you know, and he still hasn't had his movie. Just wild the journey that, you know, and particularly ironic for the Flash that this movie is taking quite like that it is going to be like just short of 9 years between him being cast and the movie coming out.
Just out of interest, right? Do you think the reason that the Ezra Miller stuff keeps getting buried is because Warner has a lot invested in him and they're just like, do anything we can to make this go away until that movie is out?
Yeah, probably to an extent. Yeah,
well, it's not just The Flash, is it? He's a big part of the Fantastic Beasts franchise as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I should say, like, I like Ezra Miller as an on-screen presence. I think The Flash is probably one of my least favorite Ezra Miller performances, but I tend to really like him.
I mean, he's my favorite member of the Justice League. I would go so far as to say.
Oh,
you can see as well. The, you know, if you're thinking about Aquaman, of sort of how do we differentiate these movies from each other? And Aquaman being, he's underwater. Like, you get that, and that's a visual hook, and that differentiates the movie. And even forget the Jason Momoa piece, but I kind of get that. I think I weirdly get that. And The Flash is the same, you know there isn't a. I know you've got those Quicksilver scenes in the X-Men movies, but now that's a few years ago. And you could see how a well-executed Flash movie, you know, at a high budget, has a prospect to it.
Yeah, and absolutely, because, you know, as we all know, the Flash entering the Speed Force is the most cheerworthy moment in cinema history. In cinema history, you guys.
Yeah, yeah,
and you go look, you know, you go. And
you've got to respect those Snyder Bros. Hustle at some point. You've just got to sit back and just go. I mean, like, incredible. The commitment to this bit is superb.
Incredible, and the amount of time I also kind of admire the Oscars for not just blasting through that bit, but like spending whatever 45 seconds on showing that scene, which is, to be clear, garbage and so boring. Just like, being like, I guess they voted, people have voted for this, so we have to show a good chunk of it. Man. But, you know, back to the Ezra Miller is, he's been a compelling presence. And he's, you know, Joe, to your point, I get that, you know, I get the Flash movie should exist and will make money. Plus, Ezra Miller is interesting and maybe a movie star. Let's cast him. But also, you know, as what's happened in the last few years, it's a reminder that Hollywood is, movie stardom and Hollywood picking stars to lead projects and lead franchises is a unpredictable and risky prospect, because people are people. And Ezra Miller, you know, I'm not going to say like he's an evil person or he doesn't deserve to work, but you know, he's, what's happened has happened, and if you're Warners, you would have liked this to have not happened.
Yeah,
and it's interesting.
And you do want to, like, because I also think there is a, you know, obviously we've made some jokes about cancel culture. I think there is a vast difference between people being cancelled and stuff happening that has a demonstrable impact on their career. Like, I didn't want to talk about this, but obviously the Will Smith stuff that James is alluding to. I don't care about litigating what happened at the Oscars, but you know, there's people going like, oh God, is this actually happening? Will Smith's projects are being put on hold now because he's been cancelled for what happens at the Oscars. And it's like, do you know what? I do kind of get when you've got a movie star who they're, you know, so much of their appeal is like broad, likable personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I was a studio exec, I'd be going, how safe a bet is a Will Smith-led project right now? Like, I don't...
Especially because he's not going to be able to promote it without having to talk constantly about the guy he punched in the face. Like, it's...
There's
a certain toxicity to it that makes you go, well, maybe I don't want to spend money on this guy at the moment.
Especially, like, Bad Boys 4, which was the project in question. I'm going, like, yeah, do I want to have a fun, silly time, like, with an action comedy with Will Smith? Like, I personally would be less inclined to see that than I was 2 weeks ago, because the way that I view that guy has changed. And I get it. And obviously I think what we should have called this whole era is consequence culture. And it's going to be interesting to see whether Ezra Miller does face consequences for this, and whether the events that have happened in Hawaii, whether that, you know, more comes out and that temporary restraining order becomes something more. So we'll have to wait and see. But I thought it was worthy of mentioning and digging into some of that that flash background. That's it for the news. We've got a couple of other things that we wanted to chat about on this new freeform format. James, it says...
I'm eating a pizza right now. I've got some cocoa butter I was applying to my face earlier because I had like a sore face. Is that the sort of stuff that goes here? I don't know.
Do I start talking about the beers I'm drinking on mic?
Yeah, we should. We should talk about drinking.
I've got
I'm drinking a Bordeaux, a lovely Merlot Cabernet Sauvignon blend, Bordeaux 2020. Yeah, great.
I'm drinking a sour ale. It's called Strawberry Fields. It's a strawberry flavored sour. It's delightful. James, what have you got?
Nothing. I'm just talking.
Okay. So we're going to talk very briefly about Moon Knight, which we will be doing an episode on Patreon, which will be, you know, for Patreon listeners, you can listen to very soon. Guys, I want your like lightning fast reactions to the first episode of Moon Knight.
Lightning fast reactions. I was not expecting to like it as much as I did. I think it is probably the most compelling first episodes since WandaVision. I did like, as you pointed out, I did quite like the Loki first episode, but I think Moon Knight is more, it feels more movie quality to me. So yeah, I'm very pro it.
Reese.
Despite the accent, which is garbage.
Reese.
Oscar Isaac is a good actor. He's doing good acting in this, and that's compelling. And here's my best review of Moon Knight episode one. About halfway through, I kind of forgot we were in the MCU. And I was sort of just enjoying what Oscar Isaac was giving me and what Ethan Hawke was giving me. And I was not thinking about its wider implications. And that is genuinely, I can't think of any of these Disney Plus shows that I've ever thought that for.
Okay. You can take this as either a compliment or a criticism. My pithy take is, I'm enjoying the Venom vibes. I was not expecting that.
the Khonshu, I assume, is talking to Oscar Isaac. I did think, it's like MCU Venom.
Yeah, it's not, but that's it's like the Venom comparisons do cut deeper than that. But that's obviously the main.
But can you even imagine like Avengers? You know, Avengers movie in 2027 or whatever, when you have Tom Hardy Venom interacting with Oscar Isaac Moon Knight, and they're both talking to each other and also their invisible friends. And that's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun thing.
In fairness, Oscar Isaac is not contracted beyond this series. It's one of the reasons he took the gig, is that he doesn't have to come back.
Is that?
Yeah, James, I absolutely believe you, and I believe that, and I'm sure we will never see the major comics character Moon Knight appear again, portrayed by Oscar Isaac, after this 6-episode season. I absolutely agree. We'll never see this character again, portrayed by Oscar Isaac, 100%.
Okay, so that you can hear our full Moon Knight thoughts. We'll be doing an episode one recap on Patreon if you're a subscriber.
Yeah.
If you're not,
pay us.
If you're not, pay you can us hear it a year from now when we release it on the movie.
Such a drag. Tough to hear. Tough to hear everyone, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay, the next bullet point on my list says Comics Corner with a K. James, what's happening in Comics Corner?
There was something you wanted to ask me about specifically, wasn't there?
Oh, I can't remember.
No, he's turned it around. He's turned it around on you, sir.
What's
you
that? Said,
no, it's Paul Dano writing a Batman comic, right?
Oh, yeah, Reese, you had some news about Paul Dano writing a Batman comic.
Okay, thank you for that segue. So Paul Dano is writing a Riddler comic. Cool. No, it's yeah. Well, I mean, he is. So Matt Reeves announced it, I believe. He's writing Dano is writing a prequel comic to his Riddler character, which I kind of thought was interesting. You know, I think that character just, you know, could do with some fleshing out, to be honest, in that universe. And is Paul Dano, who's never written a comic before, the best guy to?
It's interesting, isn't it?
I guess we'll find out. But
when people who haven't written comics get given comics to write, they're often need to be guided by a strong editor.
Paul Dano's interested in not writing this comic. He's sitting down in a room with someone who's written a comic, writing the comic, and he's going to go, oh, and when I was preparing for the role, I did imagine that maybe when he was a kid,
what if this happens?
That maybe he murdered his dog. Cool. Yeah. Flashback where they, yeah, we'll make that work. We'll make that work.
Riddler solved riddles when he was a little baby boy. Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, written.
He really liked crosswords, and then he graduated to cryptic crosswords, and then got into riddles.
What if he was a Wordle freak, and Wordle made him do kills? Yeah, cool. Write that up.
As usual, right? Like any comic that purports to be in continuity with the movie is only in continuity until the movie decides something else happened.
Is it in continuity with scenes that appear on Twitter?
It may as well be.
James, is anything else happening in Comics Corner right now? Are there any comics that you're enjoying? Reese, ditto. I'm not reading any comics.
So Immortal X-Men just started, which is written by Kieran Gillen. Is the sort of notional continuation of Jonathan Hickman's run. Like, for a while, Inferno happened, which was a big event that sort of changed the X-Men status quo. There was a pair of limited series called The Lives and Deaths of Wolverine, which sort of were the epilogue to that. And now Immortal X-Men is about the central governing body of the X-Men and the direction that that is going as a result of everything that's just happened with Inferno. It's really good. It's very funny. Sinister is a main character. It feels like the flagship book that has been missing from the X-Men line since Hickman left. So yeah, I think that is very cool and worth a look.
How long do you, from your gut, how long do you think the Krakoa era is going to last for?
I reckon it's got another couple of years in it, minimum. Wow. Sure. I wouldn't be surprised if this turned up in some way as the status quo for the X-Men in the Marvel Universe.
Mm.
Is there a chance that Hickman comes back to finish it, or is that just off the table?
I mean, again, finish, like, it's tough because it's not that he didn't finish his run, it's that the end point changed. Like, it might happen that at some point, you know, a few years down the line, they go, okay, let's have Hickman in and we'll do a version of where he was going originally.
Hmm.
I think, Joe, to your point, my understanding is that he is contracted by Marvel, you know, like paid by Marvel regularly to sort of, he's there to think big about their properties.
Okay.
And for the X-Men run, it was, that meant writing X-Men and thinking big about the X-Men franchise. But I don't think he's ended that, you know, so he's doing something else at the moment, which I guess
he's not actively writing an X-Men book, though, is the difference.
No, but I mean, he is working for Marvel actively, I think, and thinking about stuff there. So to answer your question, Joe, I totally would not be surprised if in 2, 3, 5 years or whatever, you know, once this era, when this era concludes, he's brought back in because he's a contracted writer. Or thinker to end his story, which is, you know, which I know sounds a bit mercenary, I guess, but also is part of the fun of comics, right? That you have, you know, you've just got this universe that just month to month just exists, and you've got, you know, a dozen comics coming out in this in these different pockets, and that doesn't change. So, you know, comics come out, they have to be written and drawn, whatever. And Hickman can be like, okay, well, I'm just, you know, okay, fine. Yeah, I know you want me to then go and think about Spider-Man for 6 months or whatever. And then I'll come back and think about X-Men again in 2 years. I like that. I've always liked the idea with comics of having people contribute on a regular but you know, impermanent basis onto these properties. And that's kind of what makes what can lead to such, you know, to big ideas. You know, you've just got talented people coming in and just injecting what they think into this.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that this is Kieran Gillen's second run on the X-Men as well. It's been, you know, what, 10, 15 years since he was last writing them. But, you know, it's interesting to see him back and to bring some of those ideas back with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think you could do a lot worse than picking up that book.
Okay, that was Comics Corner with a K. And
is it Comics and Corner?
No, we're not going to answer that question.
Okay, yet. No, fine.
It's, and I've already deleted it from the Google Doc, so there's no record. I've now got down here just a brief point to do an Oscars retrospective.
Oh shit!
Now, I you know, I've got some thoughts. I'm gonna share them. Please chip in when you want. Best Picture was won by Coda. Now, I've not seen all of the nominees for Best Picture. I've seen 5 of the 10 so far. Coda is the worst of those 5. my favorite was The Power of the Dog. So I am happy that Jane Campion won Best Director. Best Actor, haven't seen Will Smith as King Richard. Thought Benedict Cumberbatch and Andrew Garfield were both very good. Jessica Chastain winning for The Eyes of Tammy Faye is absurd in my opinion, but I haven't seen any of the other nominees, so fine. Best Supporting Actor, Troy Kotsur, very cartoonish character that he has to play, so I'm not going to hold it against him, but I don't think he's a good performance in Coda. Ariana DeBose won Best Supporting Actress. I think she's very good in West Side Story, but not my favourite supporting performance in West Side Story. I think it was criminal that Mike Feist wasn't nominated. Best Original Screenplay for Kenneth Branagh for Belfast. Again, check out Death of the Nile on Disney Plus now. Coda winning Best Adapted Screenplay is probably the worst of the awards that it was given. Encanto won Best Animated Feature, hashtag Justice for Luca. And I think I'm done.
That's very much the upsetting Joe's Oscars is what I'm hearing from this.
I don't care. I think the Oscars are a silly nonsense that, like, awarding are on that kind of, like, committee level is impossible. It's just funny when they get so, but that's, I mean, what a great example, right? We have Cuppy Awards when none of us were happy with the winners. There was only like 3 of us deciding them. But you know, it's nice to say this is what I liked. And, you know, whatever the Oscars, very funny to me that they embraced Coda the way that they did, which I think is a well-intentioned but fundamentally bad movie. Oscars, any other thoughts? Reese, you stayed up and watched the Oscars?
I did. I watched the whole thing. I was up till 5 a.m. It was you know, with the slap, with the last hour. It was the
what?
Generally the... So Will Smith, who was the he was nominated for best. We all know. Take the slap out of your motherfucking mouth or whatever the phrase. It was the most it was one of the most exciting live TV experiences that I've ever had in my whole life. That hour, it was so dramatic and exciting. Yeah. Aside from all of the other kind of take bullshit of it. It was great TV, and I watched it all, and I'll remember it my whole damn life, Joe. But I find with the Oscars, genuinely, like, I am crazy invested in the awards for probably, I don't know, 4 months before. Like, I'm so following the race. I'm so into it.
I love following it. I love all of the, like, the campaigning. But, like, it's just... It just demonstrably can't be that, you know, it's so, it's so unlikely that with all of the machinations that go into the Oscars, that the best films and the best performances and, you know, the best craftspeople win the awards that are deserved. But I love it, and I love the trivia aspects of it, and I'm glad that I'm glad that they exist.
But I think the difference between me and you, I think, is that I genuinely almost have no opinion as to the actual winners. I genuinely don't. But, you know, I'm so invested for months in the race, and I'm so invested in the telecast and, you know, watching it, etc. But we are recording a week past the Oscars, and you know, I think, Joe, you have thoughts about the awards.
Yeah.
I think I just didn't have a thought, like, the morning after. I didn't have any opinion as to who won. I just didn't care. I was concluded with the whole thing and done with it. Moving on to, and I'm like, oh, okay, what from the recent Sundance could, you know, might be in the best cinematography race for next year? Like, that's, you know, I'm into that phase. I don't trust my own opinions on films at all. So it's like, what if I liked it or didn't like it?
Like, Reese, Reese will tell me what he thinks about a movie, and then like 3-4 months later, I'll get around to watching that movie, and I'll say like, Reese, what the fuck were you on about? That like, that was incredible. And Reese was like, did I say that? Oh, I don't think I liked that movie. No, you did. And Reese will be like, no, I'm sure I did at the time, but now I can't remember thinking that.
That happened to me with Detain, when we both saw Detain in the same screening.
We did.
We came out and agreed that it wasn't that good. And then after you watched it, Joe, Reese was like, I thought it was great.
Good movie.
I have Reese, no takes, Williamson. I have no takes. I have no opinion.
They're just not consistent
about anything. And also, they're just not important. They're just not relevant. Nobody should care.
I like it. It's good. It's impish is what it is.
It's a little twinkle of mischief. Let's move on to James.
There's more.
The final point here, again, listeners, please do feedback on the format, is tweets/mailbag. James, you asked for tweets.
I did.
Oh, boy.
I asked for tweets. let's see. So, Sam Clements asked, are we going to be covering Morbius or Peacemaker on the Patreon feed?
We were definitely going to be covering Morbius. That's going to be our next big movie episode. Are we going to be covering Peacemaker? I think we'll probably get to Peacemaker at some point, won't we? I don't think we'll be doing it episodically, but I'd be stunned if one or more of us doesn't watch it and we discuss it in some capacity.
Yeah, it feels like something we'll do an episode on if there's a reasonable gap in the Marvel stuff where we can squeeze it in there.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode about 2 months ago. I won't discuss how I guess I went. I flew to LA and watched it on live program TV.
I've got thoughts. And I should point out, I steadfastly only watch stuff legally. So you will.
Me too. I did a flight.
Yeah, reset a flight.
I went to Hawaii. I went to American Hawaii, and I watched it on Hawaiian television.
Great. So, but I also refuse to leave the country. So you will only ever hear from me when stuff is legally released in the UK.
I refuse to give money to Sky, which is why I haven't watched it.
Right. Okay. So maybe we'll get to Peacemaker.
Yeah. Skeptical Owen has asked, will we be covering Moon Knight as an entire season on the main feed? I think we're probably done with that as an idea, unless it turns out to really warrant it, right?
Yeah, I think what we realized was that we were repeating ourselves, and in the old format where all of that was on the Patreon, but then we could do a main feed episode, whereas under this new format, we're kind of everything other than these episodes is going onto Patreon. So I don't think we will do that big wrap up. But what we'll probably do is make our last episode a bit more bumper sized and try and do like a finale recap and overall thoughts, I'd imagine.
Yeah, that makes sense. So next tweet, Vincent Bryson has asked, will we be tackling stuff like Star Wars, which has a massive comics presence? I already replied to Vincent and said, we discussed this occasionally, but I don't think any of us like Star Wars at all.
I think Reese is probably the biggest Star Wars guy. Yeah. I mean, Reese, you watch stuff like The Mandalorian and Boba Fett, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, whereas I am just completely disengaged and
yeah, same.
So I think for the, like the same reasons that when we first started this podcast, we didn't go into The Walking Dead, even though it was one of the biggest shows on TV at that time. Awesome. But we just didn't have the expertise to be able to do it properly. So we'll leave that to the podcast that can do it, I think.
But let me put out something to the listeners. I'm frigging doing it. If you guys are keen for a Reese Solo Obi-Wan Kenobi recap series on Patreon, I'll fucking
do it. No, you won't.
Because I want to see that show.
No, you won't. I don't believe you.
Tweet at me. Yeah. Tweet at me. At Reese. Tweet at me. Okay?
Guarantee.
I'll do it.
Even if this gets 100 people coming back and saying, please do that. I want nothing more. You won't get around to it.
I'm gonna do it if the audience wants it. I'll do it.
Also, that show's gonna be bad. I guarantee it. That show's gonna be bad.
That's part of the fun. It's gonna be poor, and I'm ready to record a solo, 75-minute, record on it every week for 6 weeks.
Right.
I've got my life is empty. I've got no kid or wife. I've got an empty life. I'll do it.
The point I would make is, you might think you want to hear me and Joe talking about Star Wars, but you really don't.
I don't.
Yeah, you actually want to hear?
We would just.
I don't dislike all of Star Wars. Like there are movies that have in the like episodes that I have enjoyed, but I enjoy them much less than the average person does, and it's just not my favorite thing. And there's enough people out there that it is their favorite thing that they talk about it enough already. Maybe if they make a Back to the Future Disney Plus series, or you get so.
No. Oh God! No,
they
wouldn't.
They wouldn't.
Okay. We gotta go back. It's your kids, Marty. We gotta go to a TV show that comes out in 6 months. It's 6 episodes, Marty.
last tweet. Andy Walsh says, "Do we have any take on the upcoming Batgirl movie? It seems to be under the radar. You know, finish shooting like this week."
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those, like we were talking about the other stuff. There is so many of these movies happening that it's difficult to get, like, really. I don't know, like, even, like, you know, we'll talk about this on our Moon Knight episode. I just didn't have any context on Moon Knight other than it was a show that Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke were in, and that was about it. And there was stuff in the episode that was like, oh, that person's in this, or, oh, right, okay, that I just hadn't taken in because there's so much stuff now that I find it hard to keep up. But I do, I don't know, like the idea of a Batgirl movie, I'm on board with. Didn't think Leslie Grace was very good in The Heights. But, maybe she'll surprise me here.
Yeah.
I think it's, it's a musical, so it's going to be fun. It's gonna be, like, she will be doing dancing and singing. So, that is going to be
fun. Is it a musical? Is that true?
No, I'm actually kidding, because it's not.
Could have been.
I was setting you up to be like, no, Reese, yeah, grumpy pants, it ain't. No. So I guess my take is that it would be good if it were a musical, but it isn't. And actually, it's going to be just, what if Batman was a lady with a cape? And, and what if Batman had, lady, it was a lady. Okay, fine. Yeah,
we know so little about it that it's really hard to have a take.
Well, I'm learning all this for the first time looking at the Wikipedia page. J.K. Simmons is back as Commissioner Gordon.
Sure.
Brendan Fraser is playing Firefly.
What? So J.K. Simmons from the from the Snyderverse?
Apparently.
What? So it's not Jeffrey Wright.
No, and then Michael Keaton's in it as Batman.
What?
I don't know. I'm just reading what Wikipedia is telling me. It could be lying. I don't know.
You are
for all I know, James went on and edited this Wikipedia page just before he asked this question.
Listen, James, don't lie to your friends. Don't lie to your friends by changing Wikipedia page.
I'm going to come up with a lot less plausible lies than this.
Rebecca Front's in it.
What?
Wow.
Now Joe's lying.
Yeah, you lie to your friends, Joe.
She is. It says it here.
All right.
Filmed in Glasgow.
Same as the Batman.
I'm learning loads of new stuff. Natalie Holt did the score.
Natalie Holt from Loki. That's interesting.
Mm. Yeah, okay. I'm more interested in it now than I was 10 minutes ago.
As soon as we see some footage, I'll be very up for it. But at this point, you know, it's basically an imaginary movie.
Just in our heads.
They can say it's been shot, but until I see some actual video, I don't believe it.
Sure.
Okay, so I think we have finally come to the end of this episode. We've talked news, we've talked nonsense. I hope you've enjoyed it. Reese, James, have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, yes. Despite being fully sober.
Same.
So that's the new format of these main feed episodes. If you want to hear more, you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/cinematicuniverse, for $3 or £2.50 a month, I think. You get all of those exclusive bonus episodes, access to all of the back catalogue, and on there we'll be doing episode recaps of all of the new Disney Plus, Marvel shows, and any new comic book movie releases in cinemas as well. So, Morbius, coming soon. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app of choice. Throw us a rating. If you want to get in touch with us, ask those questions for the next episode on the main feed. We're on Twitter at @Cine_verse. I'm at @JoeCunningham14. James is at James Hunt, and if you want to ask Reese for an Obi-Wan Kenobi series that he will not be recording, tweet at
I'll
Reese.
I'll do it. I'll do it. I swear to God. I'll do two episodes per episode of the show.
He'll forget he's even offered this by tomorrow morning.
I am going to do it, Joe. You scoundrel. You absolute scoundrel.
James, the bit here would be to let him do it and just never upload them.
That's like they took that from the pyramid tomb, right? Like stuff that was, you know, thousands of years ago. That would be the equivalent.
Brilliant. That's it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic fucked up the first one.
changing the name too. It's Cinematic Podcast now.
It's Cinematic Podcast. Let me try again. I was preemptively thinking about how there isn't a joke and how I'm going to handle that. And then I started scanning the sentence ahead and we went wrong.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.